Okay, I'm talking today about inconvenient faith. Yes, what is inconvenient faith? I hear you all asking yourselves, but afraid to ask it out loud. I've labelled inconvenient faith as an individual's faith that those around cannot understand or makes no sense to a normal person, whatever this normal person is. And that could be in the fellowship, it could be someone you work with, it could be someone in your family. It's, you know, something. For example, Noah, you know, he's an example, an excellent example of inconvenient faith, because, you know, it took a day or two to build that ark. And really the only person that was his best mate was probably the local Bunnings guy who supplied him with all the wood. And the fact that it took so long to build the ark didn't mean the promise of God was untrue. It just means that it unfolded over a very, very long time. Now, of course, because they lived a whole bunch longer back in those days, it was still a proportionally, you know, long time, but not perhaps long as some of our things. Of interest, I guess, when I was looking at Noah and I was trying to understand what was going on there, I was surprised I didn't find any mention of actual mocking. We often talk about, you know, how his friends and neighbours mocked Noah and gave him a hard time. Couldn't find it in the Bible, but what you find is a general disinterest. Nobody cared, you know, because Noah's thing was Noah's thing. Rain made no real sense at that particular point. And so going out and, you know, telling people that God had given you this great commission to build an ark and, you know, save the known world, yeah, Noah's a bit cray-cray because, you know, people just can't comprehend his situation. So that's an example of inconvenient faith. Another example, if we go to 1 Samuel chapter 17. Okay, it's the story of David. It's a story we know very well, but it's another example of inconvenient faith. In verse 42 here. Okay, 1 Samuel 17, verse 42. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was but a youth and ruddy and of a fair countenance. And the Philistine said unto David, Am I a dog that thou comest to me with staves? And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, Come to me, and I will give thy flesh unto the fowls of the air and to the beasts of the field. So just in case you're wondering, this is mocking. There's no doubt that what was about to happen seemed like a trivial thing. But David's faith, you know, it was awkward to everybody, really. I mean, it was awkward because here's David being chosen of the entire, you know, male population of Israel to go and face the Philistines. You know, he's not a guy that has done battle. He's not a guy that has armour. And yet, you know, it was his commission to go and take care of this problem, that he understood that, you know, he was supposed to be, like his people, chosen by God. And if that was the case, how could this thing come upon them? And sure enough, we know that, you know, he solved that problem with a little sling. Another example, if we go to Mark chapter 7, an interesting example here. Mark chapter 7 and verse 24, this is where a Gentile woman asks for a healing from Jesus. And from thence he arose and went into the borders of Tyre and Sidon and entered into a house and would have no man know of it, but he could not be hid. For a certain woman whose young daughter had an unclean spirit heard of him and came and fell at his feet. The woman was a Greek, a Syrophoenician by nation, and she besought him that he would cast forth the devil out of her daughter. But Jesus said unto her, Let the children first be filled, for it is not meet to take the children's bread and cast it unto the dogs. And she answered and said unto him, Yes, Lord, yet the dogs under the table eat of the children's crumbs. So this is pretty harsh. Jesus calling this woman a dog, and unashamedly so. It's just like, it was almost like Jesus couldn't believe that this woman would cue jump, as it were, that she would jump in front of all of the Jewish people and ask for a healing. And yet, when she answered in verse 28 and said unto him, Yes, Lord, yet the dogs under the table eat of the children's crumbs. And he said unto her, For this saying, go thy way, the devil is gone out of thy daughter. And when she was come to her house, she found the devil gone out and her daughter laid upon the bed. So it's a curious thing here. It's like it was no big deal for Jesus to do this thing, And yet it was a significantly big deal for this woman, you know, because she wasn't entitled to what it was that Jesus was giving out. But her, you know, as we read in other places, her importunity, the fact that she wouldn't give up, the fact that nothing was going to stop her going and seeing this Jesus character because he'd done all these great works. There was plenty of examples of healings, and in this particular case, he cast out the devil from the daughter. Okay, if we go to Mark chapter 5, we get to the one that I'm particularly interested in. And I've been interested in this for quite a while because I didn't particularly understand why it was here. You know, it was, you know, Pastor Tim mentioned today that oftentimes you can read scriptures and you read them and you read them, and then sometimes you just get this completely different look at these scriptures and you suddenly understand for you why they are there. Well, I had a couple of those while I was developing this talk, which hopefully you'll find interesting as well. Okay, Mark chapter 5, verse 21. This is the story of the woman with the issue of blood. Now, what interests me about this is, why is it here? You know, what is so significant about this story that it's not just in one gospel, but it's actually in three of the gospels. So this story is described, and normally if you get that level of repetition amongst the Gospels, there's something significant to learn about this. And, you know, I'd spoken to Pastor Tim briefly about it, and, you know, I looked into it and thought about it and ignored it and come back to it, and I don't know, I didn't get it. And I still might not get it, but I at least got something out of it. You know, it's like, how did this woman live? You know, this is just like, what medical condition is it that she has? I spent ages trying to figure this out. You know, that, you know, surely if, you know, the Bible talks about it, Luke, who was a physician, might have actually said something more useful about it, but no, she's a woman with an issue of blood. Okay, so verse 21. Now, Jesus had a big day. This was a big day for Jesus, although I guess many of his days were big, but in just this section, he'd dealt with legion, which is a great story on its own. We are legion, for we are many. And so he's come across the lake. Okay. So verse 21, and when Jesus was passed over again by ship unto the other side, much people gathered unto him, and he was nigh unto the sea. Now, I don't know, I wanted to work out how big the lake was, and, you know, how would these people know what was going on? Because, you know, the other side of the lake, we'd cast the swine in and over the cliff, and the guy had been freed of the devils, and so there's some good stuff happening over there. But how did these people know? You know, were there people in boats, whatever? But there were people. And behold, there came one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and when he saw him, he fell at his feet, and besought him greatly, saying, My little daughter lies at the point of death. I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her, that she may be healed, and she shall live. And Jesus went with him, and much people followed and thronged him. So this is kind of a classical sort of story. This was a politically important person who had the VIP ticket to Jesus, that whether he had minders that, you know, moved the crowd out of the way, or whether they, you know, secret handshake with Jesus, whatever it was, Jesus was going to take care of this problem. Where are we up to? And verse 25, and a certain woman which had an issue of blood 12 years and had suffered many things of many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was nothing bettered, but rather grew worse. And, you know, how often do we hear this story that oftentimes in our lives, problems that we're trying to solve get worse because of our best efforts before they get better because of God's best efforts? And all the people said that, you know, oftentimes, although there might be a miracle that happens for you straight away, we do our best to frustrate the work of the Lord, and we want to go to see the doctors and try the potions and the lotions and the salves and, you know, whatever else we might get from our best friend's uncle down at Coles, or, you know, some poultice that we make up from dead chickens, or I don't know what it is. What do we make poultices out of, Lynn? You look like you know a good poultice. a few of the flowers in the garden, perhaps, that we crush up. This woman had tried everything. And she'd had this problem. And for me, what struck me about this story always was the law. So this is not a woman that could live in the town, the village, whatever it was that she lived. She was unclean. And the Levitical law made it very clear that in her particular case, she was always unclean. Anyone she came into contact with would become unclean. You know, if she sat down on something, it became unclean. She probably wasn't married because her husband would always be unclean. She may or may not have had children, but they would have been unclean. So it was a pretty miserable existence according to the law. So her inconvenient faith was essentially not perhaps this great spiritual awakening, but she knew that this Jesus guy was getting it done. She understood that I've tried everything else. I have no money. She's almost certainly anemic. She probably is just generally unhealthy because if she spent all her money on doctors, how is she buying food? How does she have a job if she's always unclean? There's just so much to think about for just this woman. But she'd heard of Jesus. She came to the press behind and touched his garment. For she said, if I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. And who knows, other than perhaps the revelation of God or the testimonies that were going out, that she understood this, but she was absolutely assured of this thing. And straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that virtue had gone out of him, turned him about in the press and said, who touched my clothes? And the disciples said unto him, thou seest the multitude thronging and sayest, who touched me? Which is correct. It's like, Jesus, you crazy guy. You're getting pushed around. We're trying to get to Jairus' house. We've got things to do. And you're like, who touched me? It's a crazy thing. But Jesus knew. And the other interesting thing for me was, why did Jesus say anything? You know, it could have just been between Jesus and the lady, but he turned it into a teaching moment. And he looked around to see her that had done this thing, verse 33. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth. And he said unto her, daughter, thy faith has made thee whole. Go in peace and be whole of thy plague. So for this woman, just a fantastic time. You know, does it mean she gets to keep a job? Does she get to move to a better neighbourhood? Does she get to eat better? You know, her life is just completely changed because of this thing. And, you know, after looking into all the Levitical law and, you know, the fundamentals of her living, it struck me that it actually doesn't matter what was wrong with this woman. Because what we're trying to learn here is her attitude. The attitude is that the entire society is trying to keep me away. I'm being literally kept down by the man, that I can't do anything in my life without getting in trouble. I can't go and just go to the dome for a coffee because then they're going to have to scrub the place out. It's unclean for 7 days, not good for business. So it doesn't, you know, it doesn't say that in particular that she was recognised here. But just by pushing through the crowd, all of those people that she touched, unclean. You know, so it's a real big deal for her to go and do this. And yet, she got what she wanted. You know, through her inconvenient faith, you know, the disciples not being able to believe that Jesus is like, who touched me? It's like this ridiculous thing. But Jesus knew. Jesus knew. And sure enough, she was made whole. And because he already had work to do, He did go on, and Jairus' daughter was actually raised from the dead, because for Jesus, just another day at the office. Although what I did find curious about this is, if we go to verse 42, and straightway the damsel arose and walked, for she was the age of 12 years, and they were astonished with a great astonishment, because if you're going to be astonished, it should be with a great astonishment. Verse 43, and he charged them straitly that no man should know it, and he commanded that something should be given her to eat. So why is it that Jesus made this huge fuss in the crowd of this woman who was unclean, who pushed her way through to get a healing, and yet this Jairus, who politically powerful, a ruler of the synagogue, daughter is raised, don't tell anyone. I don't know the answer to that. So if you know the answer to that, please come and see me later. It stuns me that it's like, okay, this is an awesome miracle, but we're going to keep this to ourselves. So the message of this is, you know, whatever it is that you've got going on in your life, you know, be like these people. Have this inconvenient faith. You know, if you're getting the curse God and die message from people around you, they don't understand. You have a commission between you and God, that God is going to take you into the next life. And all the people said, you know, the benefit of being taken out of the Old Testament, the benefit of being given the Holy Spirit, is that we have this purity now. So whilst we're not pure on the outside, because we are but flesh, or as dung, or other things, detritus, we are nothing good in ourselves, but inside of God, we are beautiful creatures. So if we go to Leviticus chapter 21... So this was something. This was one of these scriptures where, you know, I don't spend a lot of time in Leviticus because, well, law. But I was looking for something and I found this as an accidental, and I was actually a little bit stunned. So Leviticus chapter 21 and verse 16. And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto Aaron, saying, Whoever he be of thy seed in their generations that has any blemish, let him not approach to offer the bread of his God. For whatsoever man he be that has a blemish, he shall not approach a blind man or a lame, or he that has a flat nose or anything superfluous, or a man that is broken-footed or broken-handed or crook-backed, or a dwarf, or that has a blemish in his eye, or be scurvy or scabbed, or has his stones broken. No man that has a blemish of the seed of Aaron the priest shall come nigh to offer the offerings of the Lord made by fire. He has a blemish, he shall not come nigh to offer the bread of God. So it struck me here that in the Old Testament, again, not surprisingly perhaps, is that God only wanted perfect people in the flesh to come before him. He didn't want to deal, like, well, although Israel themselves were blessed as a nation, it required these perfect specimens, these supermodels of the priesthood, if you like, to come and present the offering. And I'd just never made sense of this before. And it struck me that this woman in the New Testament, you know, under the law, you know, she really had no scriptural right, no Levitical right to approach Jesus at all. She was a woman, she was unclean, you know, she was from the bad side of town. You know, she just had no right to access God, and yet she pushed through all of that and she got the blessing. So we've been given the right to access God. It doesn't matter what our infirmities are in the flesh. It doesn't matter whether, you know, we have a good job or a bad job. It doesn't matter whether we're, you know, well-loved or not well-loved. God has chosen us. And for that reason, that's all we need to know, that we are loved of God, that we have direct access to God, that we have the power of the Holy Spirit to speak to God directly. How great is that? That this woman is a great example, because she didn't care what she saw in front of her. She just blocked everything out straight for Jesus. And that's what we have, straight for Jesus. And all the people said,